Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's hour number two of the Pompa Joe Show. Austin Bechtel, as always, alongside here. I want to remind you about the Fan Twitter site. It's brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township and SouthHillsKia.net. Also, the Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Steiner & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless they get money for you. The Fan hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We have Jay Caulfield coming up momentarily. But Austin, before we do that, and before he gets set to go, this game this weekend, Steelers find themselves, now the point spread has gone down. It started at 2.5, went to 3, now it's 1.5, which seems to indicate that people think the Steelers may be able to come back and win this game, set themselves up for at least some good vibes heading into the postseason. But I still am very leery about Joe Burrow. I you know, yesterday made a case that I thought he has every number to be considered for MVP. He himself admitted that one day he's going to win it, but he doesn't believe this year would be it because of where his team is. You know, no fault of his own. He's been everything that they can possibly expect. But how do the Steelers stop both of those guys, plus Mike Gesicki, plus Chase Brown, plus all the things they have going for Cincinnati right now on offense? That's the number one assignment for this defense. How do they do it?
Well, I think the first thing is that they need to communicate better. That's been the key theme out of the locker room over the past week, with Deshaun Elliott calling out teammates. Same thing with Patrick Queen, Cam Hayward, and others. So if they're able to get that down, just the little things that in the work that has to be done on the practice field, whether it's maybe taking out Cam Sutton or whoever it might be that is causing issues in communication, I don't know. But other than that, Joey Porter has to come back, be healthy, and play well. He didn't play well in the last game that they played against Cincinnati, and what ended up being a total track meet. And Dante Jackson, I was waiting for the dam to burst with him, and it seems like it kind of did at the game against Kansas City, where Justin Watson kind of just played around with him a little bit and made it look easy. So if the secondary can contain and allow T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith another half second to be able to get home, I think the Steelers will be able to find similar success. I feel better about this game than I have the previous three.
Well, I actually don't feel that much better, only because I think Cincinnati is a better version of themselves defensively. Since they last met, they've been really taking the ball away at a rate that helps their offense and puts them in shorter fields, which helps Joe Burrow. So I really think the Steelers, depending on how the first quarter goes, now this has been their thing. They start extremely slow every single week, which is something that is constantly talked about but never changed.
They do not have a first half or a first drive touchdown.
Not a first
drive
all year. It's a stunning development. And I would suspect if that continues and then all of a sudden Cincinnati has a lead and they start playing the kind of game, now they could win this game because Cincinnati can be held or, you know, can be taken advantage of down the field. They can win that game. They showed it the first time they met with 44 points scored. But You don't want to open it up in that sort of a game. To me, that's the wrong way to play Cincinnati because they have more ammo than you. And if you can figure out how to slow them down, good. You're not going to totally stop them. So I think the beginning of this game is going to be huge. As far as the offense now, you know, they're going to want to get back to pounding the football. That is their identity, like it or not, in this day and age of football, being a passing league first and foremost, it seems. But there is a place for good ground games. We've seen it in Philadelphia. We've seen it with Baltimore. We've seen it with Green Bay as they brought in Josh Jacobs. You can have success if you have a good ground, but you better have that success. And if not, you know, you're going to put Russell Wilson in a tough position, third down and long, like we've seen over these three games.
And I would give the brunt of the carries to Jaylen Warren. He has proved over the last couple of weeks that he, at least right now, is the better back. I'm not saying like a 90-10 split, but maybe right around 60% of the snaps, 65% of the snaps in favor of Warren. I don't think that's unreasonable. His shiftiness and burst of speed, I think it works better with this offensive line compared to Najee's running style.
Oh, I totally do. I think he should, and I think he has been. You know, at the start games, he seems to be more prominent in that role. So I think you'll see that, but I think they also need to have some success down the field with guys other than George Pickens. That's the obvious call. Well, it's George Pickens. Okay. Well, what's Pat Freiermuth should be a bigger target than he is. Arthur Smith is a so-called tight ends friendly offensive schemer. We have not seen all that much from the tight ends as a group, even with somebody like Freiermuth. And he got the big, contract. I want to see him targeted more. He's pretty reliable. I know he had a fumble last week, but the bottom line is he has to be principally more involved than he has been. So this will be an interesting Saturday night game. The Steelers, when Mike Tomlin has more than a week, has done very well in his career, opposite of shorter weeks and what's happened with those records. So I would fully expect to be a great atmosphere, final game of the regular season heading into the postseason. I expect the Steelers to come out and play much differently in the first quarter than they have in previous games. They have to. And that has to carry into the postseason, especially on the road. You want to get those teams in situations where they're down. A team like Houston. The way Houston's been, if you watch the Baltimore game against Houston, 31-2, it was simply a case where Baltimore took a lead and then they made C.J. Stroud force the ball at times when he didn't have to. If you can do that, certainly you're in a situation where you can take advantage of your defense in third down situations and getting more pressure on the quarterback. They have not gotten enough pressure on the quarterback the last three games. And again, I realize these are three much better teams than what they played maybe in the first 13 collectively. So that all has to change. And we'll get you set on KDK TV. We have our BetMGM pregame show normally on Sundays, moving to Saturdays at 11:30 in the morning. And then, of course, the kickoff is 8 o'clock tonight, on Saturday night. The following day on the number one Cochran Sports Showdown, 11:35 KDK, we'll break it all down and talk about chances. And that's all coming up. In the meantime, we're going to talk to Jay Caulfield because the Penguins are coming off a game in which I thought they played generally pretty well. However, they did not get a point in Detroit. Jay joins us on the Fan Hotline. Jay, first of all, Happy New Year to you and your amazing family. Wishing you all the best. And I know your golf game is to the point where I need some strokes from you. So I'm hoping that one of my New Year's resolutions is to get strokes from you on the golf course.
First of all, Happy New Year, Bob, to you and your family as well, and Austin and all the guys there. So, Bob, I've said this a lot. You're the smooth player. You are. You come in and we talk about this a lot. But Joe could learn from you. He should spend some time with you.
Well, he wants to. I got to free my time up.
I know. I know he does. You keep on him about the speed of the game. I think that's really true. No matter however you play, however good, bad, indifferent, as long as you're moving around the course and not keeping play moving, that's a big part.
No question about it. And I'm excited about this year because you have the U.S. Open coming to Oakmont. It's going to be fantastic. Looking forward to that. I know you are too. But let's talk about the Penguins. That is your forte.
Yep.
You break down video better than anyone. And last night I saw a game that I thought the Penguins played and competed pretty hard, yet they didn't get the only thing I'll say about this is that I saw the shot totals after a couple of periods. I expected more. I think it was 13 or 14 shots after two. They need to generate more chances early in games. And their record when they trail after two is not very good in their last 35. They're 2-29-4. So getting a lead and making people come to them, I think, is important.
Yeah, I agree. You don't want to be chasing the game, Bob, right to your point. I think when the Penguins get into that, but, that record is really kind of, the early part of the year, they were just not the same. They're a different team now, as we all know. We've talked about they're playing the game differently. But truly, and every team, you don't want to be where you're chasing and then you make decisions, different decisions, and, kind of let it come after you a little bit if they want to do that. But I felt the same way about the game, by the way. So I thought Detroit, with a new coach, you knew it was going to be this kind of game. I mean, you just felt it, right? Like, we've all seen teams, and especially in the National Hockey League, Bob, that when you make a coaching change in the NHL, there's usually a big impact, especially if you have the horses or the talent, that's underachieving with the previous coach. They make a change and all of a sudden they spark up and guys that are on the bubble play a different brand of hockey. Well, I think that's what you're seeing with Detroit. They're trying to find their scheme and still trying to find their game, but they had much more jump than the previous time we were in Detroit. So that's going to be a good move for them. But I thought the Penguins and Ned, I think your goaltending, it bought them time. Maybe they were trailing 1-0. I get that. And my key last night would have been you had to weather that first 10 minutes of the game, and Detroit did exactly what we just discussed. I think the Penguins, though, when they get behind or like any other team, some of the decision-making changes. But they kept this within a one goal. They were right there the whole time, and then we see how they lose the special teams battle. And when you lose that, and that hasn't been the case for them lately, you lose the special teams battle, more often than not, you're on the wrong side of it. And that's what happened to them last night.
Jay, we talked a couple weeks ago about how this stretch in particular, right around New Year's, right around Christmas, was going to be one of the most defining ones to determine what the Penguins are going to be this year. What's your overarching takeaway from it?
Yeah, I think they're going into it, Austin, with a certainly an upbeat to it, right? A different mindset after where they're at in October, November, mid-November. The atmosphere changes. It changes in the locker room. It changes at the practice rink. It changes inside PPG. So, yeah, I mean, the building alone, you can feel a different energy. So I think when you go into these January, February timeframe, they're on the up, right? So the energy's there. They also know they have that break coming up in February. So I look at it, Austin, like, hey, this team, I thought the loss last night, and as you both felt about it, losing 2 points to Detroit when you're going to Florida, and then you got Carolina, which I know the Penguins are playing different. Florida's a different animal, right? So you wanted to get those. But I do think, Austin, going into this month, this stretch, the dog days of winter, I think the Penguins are in that upbeat mode, and it's going to be very beneficial to them as a team. Where other teams can flatline a little bit, I'm hoping and thinking the Penguins are going to be on the up.
Jay Caulfield, our special guest here on the Fan Hotline, and Jay, to your point, now you go into a tough situation just because it's at Florida, and Florida's a team that is a Stanley Cup champ, and you know how they play. They were here this year already in PPG Paints Arena, and their brand of hockey is the same night in and night out, and good goaltending. And then they have at Carolina, again, up and down, a team that's struggled at times, but you know, these are big games. And I look at the wild card standing, and I know that it's a long way to go, but Tampa's a team down the road. They're going to host on January the 12th. Tampa has 5 games in hand, and they have 3-point lead over the Penguins. This is what the problems of digging a hole early in the season. You got to really work hard to get back, and you got to continue that energy even when you get back.
Right. And probably the best thing that's happened is that the Rangers have like fallen off a cliff. You know, everybody's
crazy, isn't it?
Then it would be It would be so much more difficult, guys, if the Rangers were playing just a normal brand of hockey, not dysfunctional, right? So they've fallen down. Now you sit there, and just like I said last night about Detroit, they're only 7 points out of a playoff, that second wild card spot. They picked up 2 points last night. They're like within 5, and they have games in hand as well. That's where you get to find what is teams like Ottawa going to do? Are they going to continue to play good hockey? Or is Detroit going to be up on the rise? Is New York even going to come back? There's a lot of hockey left, but they have the makings of a team that can do that when they straighten it out. You're right, Bob. You cannot. That is true why we always say the games you give away. And I know it's kind of cliche, but it really comes into play. And I think, though, if the Penguins have to, in their position, think about their game, go after it. But it is difficult. When you do, you are giving up games as you go forward, and the points are going to get tough. And it depends what kind of Florida team they face. They lost to Montreal last weekend. I'd expect a hard, quick team in Carolina. Bob, they play that man-on-man defense. It can be smothering, but if they're out of sync or one guy, just like we talked about the Steelers and you guys talk about the Steelers, if one guy is not on the same page as the other four, they have breakdowns. They've been having that. The goaltending hasn't been as good, and that's why they're floundering a little bit. So, but they're all good teams, and the Penguins have to really make up. Cannot give points away. They gave that room away early in the season. So whenever we're all talking about it, when we say, it's a tough loss, well, it's a tough loss because you gave away so many points early in the year, and that's right to your point, Bob. They have to just kind of take care of business when they need to, and games they're supposed to win, they have to do that.
Has the bottom six been good enough, Jay, in your mind, to really be able to carry some of the extra load, especially Crosby, Malkin, at times have gone through, miniature slumps of not being able to find the back of the net?
Yeah, I think, Austin, I think they did pick them up when they really weren't, when they were in that position. It was the number of games that the guys, Crosby and Malkin weren't finding the back of the net. But they were picking them up, and I think they were getting that across the board. I felt the one line, and I thought when they had Lizotte, Bunning, and Lizotte, Bunning, and Bevilier, when he was centering the third line, I thought that was really good. And I thought they found the third line. It only lasted for 3-4 games, and then it went off that because they're trying to get the Malkin line going. And because you move Raquel up with Crosby and Rust, now you got to find wingers for Evgeny Malkin. And because that's the line that I want, that if you want to think about something 5-on-5, guys, that's the line that has to pick it up 5-on-5. Like, we know they're going to get on the power play. We know the power play has been good, you know, since November, end of November. It's the 5-on-5 play that you want to see the second line start to make hay. And I do think, with that being said, Austin, that the third and fourth lines have been doing what their roles present, right? I mean, the fourth line's got to be their penalty killers, but they got to be game-changing. You know, they go out there, they play hard, they get the puck deep, and wear teams down when they get their shifts. And then occasionally add the offense. And the third line has to certainly be more productive. You want that. That's why I mentioned that Lizotte thing, you know, as being in the middle, because I think he brings an energy that we don't see in this lineup. He brings it, right? So I would never be surprised. If you see it go flat again, Austin, like really nothing coming out of the third and fourth, I would not be surprised to see Lizotte move back up into that slot. But Cody Glass, great feed last night to O'Connor. If he gets going, then I think you're going to have your bottom six where you'd like it to be.
Yeah, they needed two goals from him last night, and he looked as if it was just the relief of the world was off his shoulders, especially after that second one. But, Jay, when you hit on something there, you talked about the power play, and this is the reason I thought, or one of them, that they missed the playoffs the last 2 years. The numbers were just terrible for given the talent that there is. Now, all of a sudden, I see they're fourth overall, almost at 26%, and they've divvied up some of the talent. How big was that, and do you expect that to continue?
Yeah, I do. And David Quinn, you know, between David Quinn and Mike Sullivan, whose ever idea that was to do that. I think they were force feeding the idea of having Carlson and Letang on the same point. And what are you going to listen? Letang has manned the point since, you know, all these great years. And you bring Carlson in. I think they've been trying to force feed that together. That didn't seem to have any. There was no jam. There was no cohesiveness to the units when they're out there. I think the two broken up guys has been obviously really good because they've taken off. And I think it was, and now with Letang out, it was Grizzlick and Letang, and then you had the forward split up with Crosby with Grizzlick and Letang, Malkin with Carlson. I think the injury to Letang has kind of, you know, put a little bump in the road to see how they handle it. And I see O'Connor's out there. He gets a power play goal. But I do think that was a very good move. And we don't see, I don't really say one or 1A, or I just go, hey, another unit's out. And they're getting close to getting equal time if it goes the full 2 minutes. So usually that's never the case, Bob. If you, like I thought what impacted Bunning was he was in the second power play unit, and you're getting basically mop-up duty and on the power play. You're getting maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds at the most when they're out there holding the puck, possessing the puck in the offensive zone. So they couldn't get anything going. This is much better. It's got Michael Bunning jumping and going, and everybody's kind of following suit. And as you mentioned, they're climbed the fourth in the league in the power play, which you're right. They lost. Their power play was awful last year, but it was also the timing of when they didn't produce, right, Bob? It was not only did they have bad numbers, but they had chances to maybe take a lead or win a game. Instead, not only did they not produce, but they gave up a shorthanded opportunity or maybe a goal. That was a killer for them last year, and that is what blew them out of the water. And right now, David Quinn has put something together with Mike Sullivan. And I said, whoever the communication is, but he's the man that's running it, in charge of it. And certainly they've been very good. And now you put teams then don't want to go in the box. And when they do, the Penguins have been making them pay over this stretch.
The Drew O'Connor situation is kind of fascinating to me. Do you move him at the deadline? Do you keep him and try to extend him? He went a long streak without scoring before scoring two goals last night. I wonder, Jay, with the way that they're shifting him around, like what his future might end up being. Led the team in shots last night as well.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, Austin, I think if you talk to any player over their career, when you're going on a run of, when you're playing 10 to 15 minutes a night and you're gone 32 games without a goal, that's difficult for the player, right? And it's difficult for the coaching staff. They're trying to get him going. You can see how everybody, as we all talked, how everybody was extremely happy for him and him, like relief. I think if you're weighing on a contract and this is coming up, every game you go by is, you know, you're hurting yourself individually. You're hurting the team because you're getting these big minutes. I do think that plays in the mind of everybody, but I'm not sure what they're looking at. You got young legs. You know, they know he can produce. Is he streaky? What is it going to be? I think they've been trying to force him, but they put him up in the top six. And I haven't, that he seems better in a bottom six role, like a third line role, like he was last night. But that's the feel of the coaches at the time and what he's going through in practice. Hey, look, I think everybody's vulnerable. When you're not winning or you're not guaranteed in the playoffs and you're not making a run, everybody's a possibility. But when you go on a stretch like that, no matter what your position is and what your role is, if you're not able to accomplish it, number one, your value is dropping. Number two, you're hurting your own self as far as a contract when that's coming up. And number two, the team's suffering. So it was great to see him get that and produce, but it has to be with regular. When you're getting, again, I mentioned the minutes. When you're getting 10, 12 to 15 minutes a night, you have to produce offensively. And I say the fourth line indifferently because their roles play a little different. They certainly want production from their fourth line. If not, they'd have a fighter in here that's going out there and playing the game and so on and so forth. But they want production from their fourth line. But they do things differently. They're on defensive zone faceoffs. They try and put them out against tough offensive units. Their roles become a little bit different. If you're that third line role, you have to produce. And Drew O'Connor's been 1, 2, or 3 as far as what line he's going to be on. He has to have production. And it's good to see him get that last night. And hopefully for the team's sake and for him individually that he keeps it going, because you don't want to be that streaky guy that's on the downside in times that you really need him to get going.
Jay Caulfield, our special guest. One more for you, Jay, before we let you enjoy your New Year's Day. And that would be something we've been talking about really ever since Kyle Dubas got here. He's the GM, and he has responsibilities for not only the present but the future, which is a tightrope to walk in any sport, I think, when you're trying to win now but also kind of help your future build up the system. Yeah. At the deadline, let's say the Penguins are right where they – are right now, which is knocking on the door, close to a playoff, maybe in a playoff, but you know, trying to stave off other people. Do you think he's of the mind to make a move to try to help now at the expense of the future? Because I've noticed he's acquired some picks, even the Kevin Hayes deal. I mean, he acquired a second round pick in order to do it. What do you think the mindset is there as they get closer to that deadline?
I think it's a tightrope there, right? You're walking a really you know situation that, if you're on the cusp, you don't want to make it look like you're selling off, right? I think you want to make it. The Penguins are on the cusp of doing it. And I know the fan base might think differently, but if you're Sidney Crosby, you got to protect that. Mm-hmm. You have to protect that mindset, because if you show them that you're giving away, players that you know that he feels can help them win, because as we just talked, guys, the Eastern Conference to me is open, right? It's open. There's not that much great hockey. If the Penguins get on a roll and their goaltending stays solid, then they find themselves in that mix. I think it's very, like you said, it's a real thin line for him, because I know he doesn't want to, you don't want to let Sidney Crosby think you're in this rebuild. Like, if you start selling off when the team is in the hunt, then that's a bad, that would be a bad message, in my opinion. I think the locker room would get away. You'd lose the locker room that way. And they're pushing. They're all playing hard, and they're winning games. I think you got to see this. And if they go flat, Bob, and it changes, then you got to do what's best for the organization in the long run. But right now, with Sidney Crosby playing the way he still does, which is amazing to me at his age and what he does, you got to build up around and give him what he needs. And that's what you got to be very careful with that move.
Yeah, but I would do that also. I want to see this group in the playoffs. That's what it was. The whole idea was to keep them around, give them one more shot. I still think in a best of seven series, again, it comes down to goaltending more than anything else. But they have the talent to win in this conference right now, but they got to get there first.
Yeah, they do, and I feel the same way. It's kind of look. I've even felt too. I know the adage used to be, if you're not in the playoff picture by Thanksgiving, those numbers are getting blown out of the water now. It's not really, teams are out of it, then they get on, they win five in a row, and all of a sudden, they're climbed right back up. It's especially the way the parity in the division, teams not playing well. The Penguins, then it's the luck of the draw, and I will always say what you just mentioned, Bob. If no matter what the Penguins do offensively, their skill, their talent, if you don't have goaltending, like Ned was good last night, if you don't get goaltending like that, then you're not going to win. I don't care. You could be dominating a game, and then something comes in, a soft one gets by your goaltender. It's deflating. They have to stay. The two goaltenders have to stay on top of it, and they have to be at their best through this stretch right till February, the break, and then come out of it just as strong for them to have a realistic opportunity to do something. If we see that, we see the goaltenders going sideways, or even one of them on a given night, you go south. That can't happen. Your leash is too short now, right? They gave that away, as we said about 10 minutes ago. They gave that room away for any kind of hiccup when they started off slowly. So they know it. They want to keep rolling, and the goaltending has to be good for them to be any good at all as we move forward.
Jay, wishing you the best for 2025, you and the family, and we'll look forward to hearing all of your expert analysis coming up in the new year. Thanks, my friend.
Okay, guys, same you, and happy new year, and happy, healthy, safe 2025 to everybody.
All right, man.
Thanks, Jay.
We'll talk to you soon. That's right, Jay Caulfield breaking down the Penguins, and they have a tough road coming up, don't they? I mean, they got this at Florida, at Carolina, first and foremost. Two teams that are going to be prominent in the playoff picture. They have a chance to make a little bit of a statement here heading into, like you said, a five-game home stretch, Austin.
Yeah, and it's a way for them to be able to build some confidence and be able to just to build some trust up in themselves, too, because, I mean, this is there for the taking. A couple of weeks ago, it really wasn't. They were floundering 7th, 8th, just kind of teetering at the bottom of the Metro standings. But now, with everybody kind of bunched up, this is their chance to potentially separate.
No question about it. And they'll get that chance starting with the best of the best in the Eastern Conference. The Florida Panthers are next up for the Pittsburgh Penguins. We're going to take a break here. I want to remind you that phone lines are open at 412-928-9370. We're talking about the Penguins. Steelers, for sure, their game against Cincinnati. When we come back, we're going to play a little game here about which coach will be fired next, or how many will be fired, and who out there is looking to get a job in this offseason, because there are a lot of interesting names, and now that Mike Vrabel's consulting deal with Cleveland has expired, his name prominently thrown about. How many openings will there be? There's three right now, and we haven't even got to the end of the season. There could be as many as five or six more. And then names who you've heard about are going to be mentioned quite a bit. So 412-928-9370, call us. We want to hear from you. You can also hit us up on the Twitter site or X at me. I'm at KD Pomp, at Austin Bechtold. Is that it? Straight?
There's an R in between. That's my middle name.
You do that to
middle
confuse
initial.
People now.
No, I don't try to.
But you did.
But if you search up my name and just type in Austin Bechtold, you'll find me.
Okay.
What do you think my middle name is?
I hope it's Robert.
It's not.
Ryan?
No.
Ricardo?
No.
Rico?
No. You're going down a path here. That is venturing away from Ray.
Ray, okay.
I think you started off pretty well with Robert. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's not that close.
Then I thought you were delving into some different territory. That's why I went to Rico on you.
No.
All right. Welcome back on this New Year's Day, 2025. All the best to you and your families as you drive around and listen to our program. We do appreciate it wherever you may be. Fan Text Line is brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless they get money for you. It is 11:38 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, IA, and that means it's time to make that call to the Buell Insurance Agency. Get help with those premiums at 724-443-5610. 724-443-5610. Let's set out to the hotline here, Austin, and then we'll get into some football talk. But Joe in Whitehall has been on the line. So, Joe, welcome in. How are you today?
Hey, good, Bob. Thanks. Happy New Year.
You too.
Anyway, I think the guy from Cincinnati ought to get canned if he can't win in Pittsburgh because, you know, with a quarterback like Burrow and the other guys around him, he should have won a lot more games, even with them missing games, don't you think?
Yeah, well, no question. I thought they were, I don't know where you had them, Austin, at the beginning of the season. I thought Cincinnati was capable of winning a division and doing some damage based on their offense, but their defense has failed them big time.
Yeah, I had them in the Super Bowl, actually, winning the division and losing in the Super Bowl to the Lions.
Yeah, so Joe, they are a team, though, that's still very dangerous here on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah, they could win for sure, but I still think that they're, you know, they're a lot more talent, and they could do it with a better coach. And I'd just like to say another thing, Bob. Of course, you're the top guy in Pittsburgh, I know, but that Austin Bechtold, he has star power. I'm telling you.
Man, it's been the Austin Bechtold show here.
I know,
his face right now. And yeah, he is a commanding presence.
Is he with Starkey in the morning?
Well, he's here on this show.
Hi,
yes.
Joe. That's me.
No, it's not Joe. This isn't Starkey. But is he on that show with him?
He's on here right now. You've been talking to him, yes. So, yeah.
Okay.
I know he appreciates that. So, thank you, Joe, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Joe. Bob, I am not paying these people to call in and say complimentary things about me.
Nor did I expect that to be the case. But, I mean, it's a compliment to you when you're doing your time and you don't get that many opportunities to do it, especially, you know, by yourself. And when you do, you carry it very well. So
yeah,
well,
try to make the most of it. So,
all right, I want to talk. Let's talk about this game first, and we'll get into some of these head coaching vacancies. And I don't think Zach Taylor is going to be one of them. By the way, I do think this whole offseason will be very interesting what they do because they have guys who are going to get some big money. The question with them is, can you afford to bring back both Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, given what they both have done? Knowing that their defense needs major help, now there's a lot of money here. Burrow just signed his big contract. How much money is there on the offensive side, or will they become the Steeler version of the offense? In other words, the highest paid offense in the NFL, defense not so much.
Yeah, and I wonder because, I mean, aren't the Bengals always discussed as, well, they don't spend money in the right places, or maybe they don't spend money at all?
They're going to have to.
I would bring back Chase, no doubt about it, 100%. But they're probably going to let Higgins walk, Bob. I think they are. I don't think they want to command significant money to two big-time offensive weapons when their defense has been arguably the worst in the NFL, would you say? At least out of all the quote-unquote contenders, Cincinnati's defense, their secondary and their linebacking play, bad.
Yeah, and Logan Wilson's out. He's hurt. Sam Hubbard is out. He's hurt. You have Trey Hendrickson, who leads the NFL in sacks. He's been terrific, as he always is. Geno Stone, Cam Taylor, Britt, who had a pick six against Russell Wilson earlier this season. They need major upgrades on defense. And so you have to allocate money accordingly. And when I look at what they have, sure, you want to score a lot of points. And you have Joe Burrow there. You need to make sure you have people around him. They have Mike Gesicki at tight end. I think he's been good. I think they moved on from Joe Mixon. They have a perfectly capable guy in fifth-round pick, Chase Brown. But realistically, one of those two will go, and most likely it'll be Higgins. And that raises the question of what the Steelers may do in free agency themselves. They can certainly use a guy like that, but they already have one. How much money can they spend? Again, this is all a puzzle that comes back to quarterbacks. It starts there. You have to figure out your quarterback situation, how much money you're going to allocate to whoever it is next, or do you start that whole process over again? But in order to attract a guy like T. Higgins in free agency, if that's what your interest is, you better have a quarterback in place.
So they are going to have $54 million in cap space, according to Over the Cap, available for them next year.
Who's they?
The Steelers.
Okay.
Cincinnati is going to have about $60 million. So, I mean, if you pay Russell Wilson $35, $40 million.
Too much.
So what, it's 30 the deal now? The Baker Mayfield contract is the highest I would go, which was 3 and 100. And I would want the last year non-guaranteed.
It takes two to tango. He's going to have to agree to that, and he might. He might like it here enough that's the perfect number for him.
What they should do is something like the Jordan Love type of contract, what Green Bay did with Aaron Rodgers, where they draft somebody. I wouldn't sit Love as long as they did, 3 years. But I would draft somebody, whether it be this year or next year. I'd rather it be next year because this crop of quarterbacks is not very good, and have him sit behind Wilson for a year and then step into the role. Well, kind of like what they did in Atlanta with Michael Penix and Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, but that went awry very quickly.
Yeah, but
Whole idea there was to you know, and then Cousins just, I mean, that was money not well spent.
They shouldn't have given him a 4-year deal.
No, it's much like in a different way, even though the Deshaun Watson was reprehensible to me, that the Haslam family would reward him and all of his crap that they had to deal with, and they brought him in, gave up a lot to get him, and gave him that money guaranteed. It's similar in the sense of the money. Kirk Cousins, not the kind of quarterback you would expect to be there for a long period of time, and somehow they gave him 4 years at a big amount of money and still owe him a ton, knowing he's coming off an Achilles injury. That, to me, is a red flag. I will use that as Russell Wilson, that calf injury. Calves are tough. Calves can lead to Achilles. I assume everything's fine there, and I hope it is, but you have to factor age into this as well, and I think Justin Fields is a young. It would depend on what they believe Justin Fields can be. If they've seen enough strides this year, that if they clear it out and say, you're going to be our quarterback in the future, we believe you'll take the next steps, we're going to surround you with the right people to make that possible, the talent is there. It's just a matter of corralling it and making it effective in different parts of his game, specifically decision-making from the pocket.
It's there, but at the same time, my real question, and I'm a Fields believer, is that we're in, what, year four now of Justin Fields, Bob? When does it eventually click?
Again, you don't hold against Chicago's. They have four different offensive coordinators, three different head coaches. I mean,
I do.
That's tough for any young that you just suggested bringing in a guy to learn. What do you think Justin Fields was like in year one? When they were throwing him out there with no specific plan, I think it helped his run game, but it hurt him as a passer. And I think he's digging out from that. So for me, I wouldn't rule that out right now. I want to see how this plays out this week and into the playoffs before I make final decisions. But they're going to have to figure something out.
And maybe they played him too early. Like, maybe they should have had Fields sit and wait for a little bit. I don't know what the true barometer is and how much quarterbacks really are helped by sitting. It's worked in Green Bay, but other than that, it hasn't
worked. For Aaron Rodgers, too. He sat for a while.
Yeah.
In both cases.
Green Bay, just for whatever reason, just figures it out better than anybody else. But I would think that maybe a two-year deal with Wilson is going to be the most likely. Three, it would have to be non-guaranteed, at least for me.
All right, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions regarding coaching here. And it's, you know, we already know the three openings. The Jets are looking. And I've read, I don't know if this is accurate or not, that they're talking about Rex Ryan potentially. I mean, come on now. Are they going to go back in that area to do it? No, they should be looking at a young person. They fired Robert Saleh back in October, and then they fired their general manager. They brought in they've done everything backwards. Woody Johnson has mangled that organization, so they need somebody there. So does New Orleans, and so does Chicago. Those are the three. New Orleans, you know, Dennis Allen fired November the 4th. What are they going to do there? And Chicago, this, here we go again. You know, Eberflus out. What are they going to do?
Eberflus,
yeah. Not any idea how to do anything on the field when it comes to clock management. But, you know, those are the three. But let's delve into it deeper. A lot of people in Cleveland say that's going to be a change and that the blame will come on him. They're 3-12. He's a two-time coach of the year, Kevin Stefanski, like that or not. Their problems have not been Kevin Stefanski.
Not at all.
The problems have been the ownership there. So what do you think they do, and how do they handle Deshaun Watson moving forward?
Well, they already tried to restructure his deal. Well, they did restructure it so that his cap number, when his contract eventually does come off the books, is not as harsh as it once was. They dug themselves a ditch that they're not able to climb out of, and they're just going to have to lay in it for the next couple of years, I think, Bob. Unless what I would do if I'm Cleveland is you restructured Watson, you play Watson at the start of the year, but you draft a quarterback, whether it be Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, with the third pick, because Travis Hunter is going to go one unless somebody trades up. And you play your quarterback, I don't know, halfway through the year, maybe you start to play him, and Deshaun Watson, you basically just kick him to the curb and do what the Broncos did with Russell Wilson and what the Falcons are probably going to do with Kirk Cousins and just eat the money and get him out of there. Because the quarterback is the main problem, quarterback and ownership, and the ownership's not changing.
Right. I'm going to run through some quickies before we get Steve on, who's on line one, but the New England Patriots brought in Gerard Mayo to be their guy, and quite frankly, Robert Kraft has messed things up there, I think. He guaranteed that job to him, put it in his contract before he ever got it. So you made a determination. That's never a good way to go, in my view, when hiring a head coach. They have a quarterback who I think could be effective, but they need a lot more. But I don't expect a coaching change just because of that. Tennessee, first-year coach, I don't think they're going to change. They got quarterback issues. They'll wait a little bit. When you talk about the Giants, though, Brian Daboll and Joe Schoen, now their tandem, I don't know what they're going to do there. They got rid of their quarterback, Daniel Jones, yet they've been winning games they shouldn't be winning, and they've moved themselves out of the top position of getting the, you know, maybe a quarterback of the future there, which is crazy to me. They're doing it the wrong way. I think Daboll will be fired. Do you?
I do. I don't think he should. I think he's a really good coach, but they've completely screwed up the quarterback. And if you screw up quarterback, you are not going to stick around long in the NFL, depending on – it doesn't even matter how good of a coach you are. I don't like firing first-year coaches. Like the same thing in Tennessee. I don't think they're going to move off of him, but Daboll end up being the scapegoat, even though the real scapegoat should be their management team for letting Saquon Barkley walk.
Oh, yeah, that was their worst decision, and now this weekend, he gets a chance to go over and break a record against the team that got rid of him. Wouldn't that be sweet if you're Saquon Barkley and if you're an Eagles fan?
He needs 100 yards. I think he's going to get it in the first half.
Well, Nick Sirianni said he was not sure if he was going to play. We talked about this yesterday. My view on it would be, okay, I go to him and say, your call here. You want to play and get this record? That's your record. I'm all for it. I'll take the blame if something happens. Hopefully it won't, but I'm going to play him. Jacksonville. Now, this is a mess. And the reason is a quote I discovered way at the beginning of the season from their owner, who said he believes this group is the best team assembled in Jacksonville franchise history. That was what he said going into this season. They're now 3-12. Doug Peterson should take the fall for this, but how much of it is on Trevor Lawrence? They gave a lot of money to him, and he is just not good anywhere near that. I think Peterson will be fired.
Man, I did not remember that. Yes, there is no doubt that Peterson will be fired. I'm surprised that he has not already been fired in season, like so many other coaches have been. Trevor Lawrence does deserve some blame. Some of his weapons around him have also been hurt. His defense isn't really good enough. But Doug Peterson, I feel like, has lost the locker room halfway through the season. And part of that is Trevor Lawrence has also been hurt.
Here's a tricky one. Dallas. Mike McCarthy's at the end of this contract, as are all of his coaches. To me, it would be an easy way around that. But the last time they were in this situation was Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett had moved to the end of his contract. They waited a few weeks, and they finally brought him back to a new five-year contract. I do not see that possible in Dallas the way things are going. As much as I respect Mike McCarthy, I think he's going to be looking for another job.
I think he's going to be gone too. And the thing about Dallas is, until Jerry Jones basically takes the reins off of all power and all control in Dallas, their head coaches are not going to be able to thrive. I mean, since Jimmy Johnson, Barry Switzer, what coach has been able to do well enough in Dallas? I mean, they haven't been back to an NFC Championship game since 95. And they seemingly win like 10, 11 games every year and then fold in the playoffs. Right. And Jerry blames everybody but himself.
Yeah, and they let Tony Pollard go, and they brought back Ezekiel Elliott, and they just released Elliott now. The decision-making is difficult down there. All right, let's go to Steve on line one, joining us right now on the Pomp and Joe Show. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Happy New Year to two really good guys there.
You too. Thank you.
Hey, Bob, you know, I just thought of something while listening to you talk. You forgot that one Italian restaurant in Westview, a new one called Severina. Did you ever eat there?
You see, I've never been there. I mentioned Rico's yesterday and so many other good – we're lucky we have a lot of good Italian restaurants. I went through my list of 10, but I've never been to Severino's. Where is it again?
It's in Westview, and it's only a couple years old. It's make sure you leave room for dessert. They got some of the best desserts around Pittsburgh, honestly. They make them fresh every day.
Well, see,
fantastic.
Here's my philosophy about desserts. Now, Austin Bechtold, who's very thin, could eat as much as he wants, and he doesn't have to worry about gaining. His metabolism is at an all-time high. As we get older, the metabolism changes. I have become more of a taste tester dessert eater, which is to say, I want to see a dessert, but I'll take one bite of it, and that's it. I try to discipline myself because some of these desserts, and if you go to an Italian place like the one you're describing, those desserts are big. You can't handle them by yourself. At least you shouldn't as you get older, right? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, it's family style. You know, you got to everybody gets a spoon, everybody takes one bite, and you have a cup of decaf and you feel fantastic. You know, that's the way, you know.
and you need a little Benedictine or Galliano in the after-dinner drink department.
Absolutely.
Right? A little amaretto.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes. That's
very enjoyable.
What's on your mind, Steve?
Yeah, so you guys were talking about the quarterback situation. Yeah, I would definitely keep Russell Wilson, but I think for the backup, I Garoppolo's out there. He's a backup right now. He would be a better backup than what we have. He's a proven winner.
I don't know
he's
about
been able
that.
To take,
I think he'd want more money.
To take somebody to.
I think Kyle Allen, if that's the case, is now we haven't seen him really. The one throw he did make when he got in was a good one. I wouldn't mind him as the backup.
I just think there's better options than the backup we have now that I think will be overpaid for what. Listen, Russell Wilson made some mistakes when we fell behind. He tried to try a little bit too hard, but all quarterbacks do that when you fall behind. You know, it just seems like, you know, our current backup quarterback does that all the time, where he takes a sack for 20 yards or drops the ball, you know, early in the game when you don't, you know, it's not like you're trying to catch up and you really need to try too hard. I just think there's better options for less money out there. And I think the Steelers have like $11 million left in the cap this year. They could arrange, well, it's still not too late. You got a week. You could arrange a new contract for next year that includes $11 million of this year's money that would only bring him down to maybe like 19 for next year. That's what I would do, but I'm going to hang up.
Yeah, I don't think you can do anything until this year is over just because he is being paid by Denver. So they can't really do much now. But, Steve, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Happy New Year to you at 412-928-9370, the number to call. I'm less concerned right now about a backup and more concerned about who they determine is going to be their future, and I say future, whether it's short-term or longer-term future quarterback. They need to figure that out. And again, I'm going to wait to see how this season plays out the last couple of games here, and we'll see where we go from that. Kyle in Freeport joins us right now before we go to a break. Hey, Kyle, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you, Bob?
Good, thanks.
The last couple of weeks, I think every week I check in with you on Instagram and I say, hey, just so you know, pumping ain't easy. I haven't gotten a response yet.
Well, you know what? It's hard for me to go through every response, and I apologize for that. I wish I could, but... Kyle, it's tough when you're working and you don't have a lot of time to start scrolling. If I do it, it's late at night, and by then who knows if I'm capable.
No, I get it.
But I appreciate you on that, and you're right. Pumping ain't easy. Never is.
So where did the Italian restaurant list come into play? How did that come up?
Someone on the fan text line asked. So, okay. I mean, I went through, and it's tough on the top of your head because there's so many good ones out there that I like, and I like most every Italian place I've been to. But so I just off the top of my head went through 10.
I want to invite you to mine. I own one, Asti Steakhouse at Grandview Golf Club. I know you're a golfer. I don't know if you've played at Grandview. It's not an easy course.
No, I haven't done it. I've heard a lot of good things about it. So it's called what again?
The restaurant's Asti Steakhouse, but the golf course is Grandview Golf Club. And you in City of Limits, I don't know if Austin plays golf or not. If he does, I'm sure he's good.
By the time he has enough of Joe and me, he will. He'll end up getting the clubs, okay. And he will, yes.
Yes, I think I have golfed a couple of different times. I am not very good at it. I'm better at putting than anything else. So I'm on the
– that's part of the
game. You guys are both invited to play for free. You come down, ask for Kyle any day of the week. You guys are local celebrities, and we all love you.
All right, so you're saying about Italian. Asti Steakhouse is an Italian place?
It's an Italian steakhouse, and we're at Grandview Golf Club. So it's not your traditional, clubhouse restaurant, separate owners. We're open to the public, and I've been trying to get a hold of you guys to invite you. Come down, get whatever you want. It's on me. Listen to the show every day. I love you guys.
Kyle, thanks. We appreciate that, and we will take advantage of that. And I'd like to. My wife enjoys new restaurants as well. So
bring whoever you want. Bring them all.
Be careful what you wish for there, Kyle. But thanks for the invite, and Happy New Year to you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Happy New Year, guys. Thanks.
All right. So, Kyle, huh? There we go. We got a place to play golf and eat afterwards if you want.
I would love to.
This is why I tell people to play golf. Golf people are great. We enjoy company. We enjoy the game itself, the camaraderie, the social activity, and the fact that you don't have to be on your phone so much. And then afterwards, you go to get a drink, you go to dinner. It's a complete day, and then you're tired. You go to bed.
I think we could have an incredible day out on the course.
Well, I'm going to look into my Instagram, and Kyle, hit me up if you're listening here and make sure I see a more recent response.